On January 1st, after years of legal battles, California's cap and trade program came online. The move to regulate carbon emissions in this fashion by the nation's most populous state and the world's ninth largest economy could have profound implications. And joining us now is Time Magazine senior editor Brian Walsh. He's been writing about this story for Time.com. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
First off, can you explain how a cap-and-trade system is supposed to work to reduce carbon emissions?
Sure. The cap in a carbon cap-and-trade is a legal limit on carbon emissions that the state establishes, and then over time, they reduce that cap so you can emit less and less carbon over the years. And so a company is given a certain level of allowances. It can, a certain amount of carbon is allowed to emit, and it has to meet that cap, bring under that cap, and if it fails to do so, it might be able to buy permits in an open market. That's the trading part of the cap and trade. It also, if it actually does succeed on its own in reducing its emissions below that cap, it can actually sell its additional permits to other companies. So there's it's basically a market-based system to reduce emissions. It was actually used fairly successfully back in the early 90s to reduce the emissions that actually cause acid rain. So for some time now, this has been really the way environmentalists want to try to tackle climate change.
And it only goes after people who emit a lot. We're not likely to go after consumers because they're polluting the air with their automobiles.
Right, exactly. I mean, this system, California especially, is focusing first on power plants, on big industrial users. So, no, it won't be small businesses won't really be affected by this, at least not directly, certainly not consumers, anyone on that level.
In November, California held its first auction for carbon allowances. All of the allowances were sold, and the right to emit a ton of CO2 in 2013 went for an average price of $10.09. How did the state arrive at that price of $10 and change per ton? Doesn't that seem a little low?
Well, it is a bit low. I think lower than people perhaps were expecting. Actually, they established a price floor, so they would not allow it to go below $10. And there's a few ways to look at this. One is that, you know, this is companies essentially saying that they feel fairly confident that they won't need to buy that many additional permits to meet the carbon cap. They feel whether it's because of their own work, energy efficiency, renewable energy, any of the other ways you as a business or a power plant can reduce carbon emissions, you'll be able to do so without needing a whole lot of permits. So in some ways, that could be seen as a good thing. It means that it's unlikely to have a big impact on the economy. But it also sort of indicates, I think, maybe some skepticism or some doubt on the part of these big emitters that this system will carry through. It's faced a lot of legal challenges. It's faced one unsuccessful ballot challenge back in 2010 that would have essentially suspended it. So it could be that low price indicates that companies are a little skeptical that this will continue, 2014, 2015, 2016.
Now, where does the money from the CO2 auctions go?
It actually has to go to either administrating the system, which does take some money, or it can go towards programs the state can do to improve energy efficiency. Basically, it has to go towards something that has to do with reducing carbon emissions. It can't, right now at least, it can't simply be taken by the state of California and be used for, paying down the debt or any number of things that California might otherwise want.
The California economy hasn't been in great shape. Hasn't it been argued that this program is going to cost businesses a lot of money and hurt the future economic prospects of the state? And won't manufacturers just move to Oregon or Nevada in order to stay competitive?
Certainly that's the argument you hear from people who are opposed to the system. The California Chamber of Commerce has made that argument quite loudly. They've actually fought this legally as well. The cap that the California is doing is not terribly ambitious, so it shouldn't really cause that much economic pain for the companies that will be involved. California has in the past been very good at reducing emissions, at being energy efficient, at using more renewable energy. And of course, this also benefits in a sideways way clean tech companies, the green economy, which California really leads the country in this. So the idea here is, again, this is sort of an economically efficient way to reduce carbon emissions, but also, support the shift to renewable energy, support the shift to a greener economy. There is a risk that you could end up pushing, heavy emitters out of the state, maybe large polluters out of the state. That is a possibility. That's one of the disadvantages of the fact that it's just California alone that's doing this. So that wasn't the original idea. There was supposed to be a large sort of Western states initiative all working together. So that could happen. But at the same time, California has always had higher energy prices, tougher environmental regulations than other states, and that's often just been part of the cost of doing business in the Golden State.
And I was in Los Angeles just last month, and you still see the air. It's not as bad as it used to be. But this program, known as AB 32, was signed into law by then-Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger in 2006. And you say court legal challenges are the reason it's taken 7 years to implement it, along with the fact that there was an attempt to overturn it through a ballot measure in 2010?
Yeah, it took a while for this to happen. I mean, they wanted to build up a lot of time to actually design the system correctly. They're also looking at the example that the European Union has done. The European Union has had a emissions trading program, a cap and trade program now for several years, and it's been beset with a lot of problems. You've seen the price of carbon kind of go up and down and really hit rock bottom. There have been issues with fraud. And so California, was able to take some time, really get the system right, really make sure that they knew how much the large emitters were emitting in the first place, so they could then get a better cap, a more logical cap. And then, of course, you did have these legal challenges as well. One of the big ones is, as we mentioned before, there is an auction, there has been an auction for carbon permits, and the Chamber of Commerce has said that constitutes a legal tax, that this is not just a cap-and-trade program, but by making companies or requiring companies to buy permits, it's actually a tax. Now, the state has argued that because that money is not going into the general government fund, because it's actually going towards furthering environmental goals, that's not the case. So far, they've been winning. The system is going forward. But that is one more question out there going forward that could be a bit of a regulatory risk that I think companies are looking at and may, again, make them a little gun-shy about really planning, 3-4 years down the line for this.
You mentioned the European Union's implementation of a version of cap-and-trade. That was in 2005. It was called the Emissions Trading Scheme. And you say it has not been a great success. Has it hit its targets?
It has its targets, and it has been successful, or at least Europe has been able during this time period to reduce its carbon emissions to hit those targets. The problems really seem more to be in the way the system was instituted. Unlike California, Europe did not sell permits right off the bat. And so what happened actually is that big emitters sort of were given these free permits. They didn't have to pay for them the way they did in California. And then they passed on those prices, that sort of increase in electricity prices to consumers, and then took these windfall profits in between. So, it was sort of the worst of both worlds in that case, in that consumers got the economic pain of cap and trade, but companies were just able to make money off it. You also had issues with...
And that won't happen in California?
That's much less likely to happen in California because of these permits, because you have companies sort of forced to make to buy those permits on the open market. They won't be able to sort of carry out. They obviously will. Some of that expense will go on to consumers because they're paying for the permits, because that money will go towards carbon emission reduction schemes. You're unlikely to see that kind of windfall profit taking in California the way you did in Europe. And then also Europe had issues, I think, with not getting the cap right. The cap was actually too high, especially when you think of in 2008, 2009, you had the recession that also caused emissions to really plummet. So that really killed the value of carbon as well. Over time, Europe has gotten better at this, but they really just struggled early on to do this. California has a longer history of really tracking carbon emissions, so they, I think, have a lot more confidence that they're going to get that cap right, and that's really key. You don't want the cap to be either too high or too low, because if it's too high, you don't really get much environmental value. If it's too low, you may end up really hurting the economy too much at a time when, as you pointed out, the economy's not doing that great to begin with.
Well, according to the California Air Resources Board, the state emits 447 million metric tons of carbon dioxide a year. But to some degree, isn't that because you need to have a car to get around in most places in California other than San Francisco?
It's true. I mean, that's a big part of the system. And it's only initially you're going to see this going after just power plants. But eventually it will expand to look at transport fuels as well. And I think that's really when the rubber will meet the road when it comes to whether California can really drastically reduce its carbon emissions going forward. And, there's a certain extent where it's going to be difficult to do that. As you point out, cars are a key part of life in California, and it's going to be very difficult to change that. But at the same time, California was also the state that really pushed hardest when it came to fuel efficiency standards. They were the ones that went ahead of the federal government initially when it came to requiring cars to be more efficient. So there are definitely ways to reduce carbon emissions, that still work with a pretty car-friendly culture.
Is California the only state that could do this on its own? Wouldn't it be harder for a smaller state to try something like this?
I think it would be a lot harder for a smaller state to do this. Now, you've actually had here in the Northeast a sort of smaller scale regional greenhouse gas trading program that deals with the power sector, but that's been a lot less ambitious. You actually saw New Jersey drop out of it, thanks to Governor Christie. California, you know, is, as you pointed out, the ninth largest economy just by itself. I mean, it can move markets just what it does on its own, really. And also, it has a long history of taking the lead on environmental policy and then really pushing the rest of the country forward. You mentioned, you know, the air pollution in Los Angeles. Obviously, there used to be much worse. California pushed ahead on really tough air pollution standards, and the rest of the country followed suit the same way with fuel efficiency. So even though it's far from ideal for California to be doing this on its own, essentially. You know, at the same time, I think it can be a model for the rest of the country if this works over the next several years. I think it'll really give credence to the argument that, you know, we can do this on a national level. We can price carbon, we can limit carbon without really killing the economy.
But it seems to me the trend is moving in the opposite direction. Last year's UN Climate Change Summit was something of a bust, and Canada is pulling out of the Kyoto protocols. It's moving ahead with extracting oil from the tar sands in British Columbia. There are, as we mentioned in our previous segment, concerns about the huge increase in natural gas drilling in the United States. Aren't both of those trends likely to make the international climate situation much worse?
Well, it depends, really. When you're talking about natural gas, for instance, actually, that's helped the United States reduce its carbon emissions over the last few years, as you've seen cleaner, you know, somewhat cleaner natural gas replacing coal power. When it comes to that larger question, that's absolutely true. I mean, at this point, it looks very difficult to imagine an international climate regime of the sort that we were hoping for, I think, or a lot of environmentalists were hoping for in the last decade. You know, the idea of the Kyoto Protocol only something that's truly global. So what you might see really are individual countries, even individual states, taking those steps on their own, those countries and those governments that are willing to do so going forward. You mentioned Canada definitely has dropped out of the Kyoto Protocol, and Canada really is on a federal level is very much a petro state. I mean, it's very focused on extracting that oil, extracting that natural gas. But if you look at individual provinces, British Columbia actually has a carbon tax. Quebec is actually working on capping carbon, might actually work with California. So I think we have to sort of give up that dream of a huge international system and focus instead on where progress can be made. It can also be made in terms of, you know, extending research for clean energy. It can be made in terms of, you know, improving energy efficiency. So it's going to be a little bit more catch-as-catch-can, not so much that global system, but, you know, progress can still be made, and I think California is showing that.
Brian, we have just a minute left. California has a traumatic recent history with energy market manipulation. Are there concerns there could be another Enron out there looking to take advantage of this program?
I would be concerned about that. I mean, you have, I think, with the California Air Resources Board, you know, a pretty good bunch of regulators keeping tabs on this, making sure that nothing like that will happen. But at the same time, you know, this is why we call it somewhat of an experiment. You know, we don't exactly know what will happen. We, you know, they've done their best to design the system. We've seen it work in the past with other pollutants, with the acid rain example. But, you know, to some degree, we're kind of entering new territory here. And what happens in California will have a huge impact on what's doable elsewhere.
Brian Walsh is a senior editor at Time Magazine. He has been investigating the story behind California's cap and trade system, just recently instituted after years of trying to get it going. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's good to be there.